Well, what does it mean for Jesus to be the light of the world? Last week, if you were here, we heard Jesus announce that to people in the temple. So he stood in this place where there are these four giant candelabra, 75 feet high, and he stood at the base of these. They can work that out by where those events were happening in the temple. And as he was there, he said, "I am the light of the world," which is a massive statement. How are those words supposed to land on us? What does it mean when Jesus says, "Follow me and you will have the light of life"? What does that mean for us? What does it mean for Jesus to be the light of the world in my life? What does it look like to take up Jesus' offer and to follow him? What will this look like and mean? Well, I'm glad you asked, because that's what John chapter 9 helps us look at. And that's where we're going this week with John chapter 9. In John chapter 9, we see a prime example of what that could look like. It begins with Jesus seeing a blind man first. He sees the blind man. That's already significant, because Jesus always sees people first before they ever see him. He's on the front foot out towards people that need him. And in the course of this story, Jesus will bring sight, physical sight, to this man's eyes. And there's sort of a parallel apparent between physical sight and spiritual sight that runs together. And we're meant to see that connection, see the parallel, and take on board things that we can know about spiritual sight. In the same way that Jesus provides physical sight to this man, he also provides spiritual sight. And the blind man responds to Jesus' approach towards him. We need Jesus to come near to us and open our eyes so that we would see him. That's where this passage is going. But there's a question from left field in this passage about the nature of this man's condition and its relationship towards sin. It's a little bit of a furphy that comes up front. It comes from the disciples, this question, who they say, and it seems to be being a popular perception. That's interesting. I've got the quotes for what they say, and then I don't have it. I think we've got verse 2 up there. Have we got it as a slide? "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" And that seems to be, it seems to have been a really popular perception that anything that ailed a person was attributable directly to sin in their lives, or perhaps their parents or someone around them. And in a wonderfully liberating answer to that question, Jesus says that it's neither in verse 3. He says, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned." And I think that's such a wonderful thing for that blind man to hear. Jesus says, "But this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. As long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world." And that answer has payload for anyone with a condition or a disability to hear. It means that their situation isn't something that directly correlates to sin in their lives or through a relative, though it's possible that some sicknesses do come that way. Jesus, instead, he turns the condition of this man right around, and he says that this is an opportunity. It's an opportunity for meaning and purpose and for God's grace to shine in this man's life. What a wonderful transformation of popular perception towards something really wonderful. And his words are, "so that the works of God might be displayed in him." Can you imagine what that would be like to hear in those terms? Something that does is it turns a life around that might seem fruitless or meaningless into a life that has purpose, a clear sense of purpose, and a wonderful goal to be reaching in life. back in the narrative, from verse 6 onward, Jesus spits on the ground. He makes mud, which he puts on the man's eyes, and tells him to wash in the pool of Siloam. Now, we don't have a particular explanation given to us for why he does that. Do you just want to check on her? Yep. We don't have a particular explanation given for why he does that, but some people think that it reflects the creation narrative when God used the dust of the ground to make man. We don't know. That's a theory, but that's one thing that's out there. Added to this is something said about the pool of Siloam, meaning sent. Jesus has spoken about how he has been sent by the Father on this mercy mission, and that seems to be cause for us to reflect here in the narrative on the divine nature of Jesus as the one sent from the Father. So there's something in that about the person of Jesus that's revealed in that. He's been sent by the Father with special purpose and significance, and he now sends this man to the pool of Siloam, where the ceremony for bringing, you remember the ceremony for bringing water to the temple? That was from the pool of Siloam. We talked about that a few weeks ago. It's like Jesus has taken part of that and turning that around towards himself again. So the blind man, he goes to the pool of Siloam and he washes as Jesus instructed. And in our Wednesday group, Tony made the comment that it would have taken quite some effort for him to, for a blind man to get to the pool of Siloam. I've never thought about that before. You just sort of hear these comments and think, yeah, that's right. This man had to take Jesus at his word. And he seems to have done just that. And he made his way to the pool and he washed. And the result is that he comes home seeing. And I wonder what a moment that would have been for him when he sees for the first time. It ought to have been a moment for everyone else to celebrate as well. But the religious types of the day are more concerned with the religious regulations than with the amazing provision of a good God. It seems so obvious that God's goodness should win the day. It seems so obvious. But not when you have your eyes so tightly bound on the regulations and you don't look up. That's what wins the day. And that's what wins the day here for the Pharisees. Now there's some discussion about whether he's the man they think he is. The formerly blind man's happy to admit it's him. Yeah, I'm the one that was blind. It's me. But they're questioning even that. Anything to question what's happened. And he explains, the blind man explains how it was Jesus who changed him. He knows who's the responsible agent in his life. And this is the next part of this man's journey. And he's on a journey, isn't he? As you go through this passage, you see change happening in this man's life. You see perception of who Jesus is changing as you go through this passage. He's able to reflect honestly on who Jesus is, unlike the Pharisees. There's no filters that try to twist who Jesus is or what he's done. He takes Jesus at his word. Next up, the Pharisees protest the fact that Jesus worked on the Sabbath to do this miracle. And again, their attention is not on Jesus. Their attention is on the regulations. It's elsewhere. And there seems to be this constant opposition to Jesus that we encounter in John's gospel. Sometimes it's from unexpected quarters, like the religious types. You'd expect them to celebrate who Jesus is, but it doesn't happen that way, does it? Those religious laws, they're there to encourage closeness to God and to dwell in the rest that he provides and to live in thankfulness for his provision. But right here, Jesus' provision is being treated with suspicion and derision. They say in verse 16, this man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath. And how can a sinner perform such signs? When they asked the healed man what his opinion of Jesus is, here's his next step in the journey. He says he's a prophet. So you see him moving along in his understanding of who Jesus is. He's the man who healed him. Now he's a prophet. And we'll see this track even further as he encounters who Jesus is. But the Pharisees, they don't change. They're still in the same place. They're unbudging and they seek to discredit these events. They go to the man's parents. They look for an explanation for them. But the parents, they're Switzerland. They choose the neutral path. They stay out of it. Say, let him answer for himself. And you sense the fear of these authorities in their response. So they keep coming back to the healed man for an answer. But the healed man, he's not going to budge on the events that he knows to be true. He's got eyes that see now, see physically, but he's got eyes that see something about who Jesus is. Nothing can take away the enormity of what his transformation has done in his life. And when he's asked how Jesus opened his eyes, verse 26, he chastises them for not listening to what he's already told them. And he's got a point, hasn't he? He's telling them, but they're not taking it on board. He suggests that maybe they want to become disciples. We thought that was pretty cheeky. Thought that was pretty excellent. But the Pharisees' response is far too quick to deny Jesus and to oppose Jesus, verse 28. So they hurl insults at the man. And it's just descended into name-calling against Jesus. That's the territory that we've got to. Nothing goes in. The perceptions are just so filtered that they won't take Jesus on board for who he is. And so the trenches get dug deeper. The antagonism builds and the barriers go up and Jesus is held at a distance. The healed man just knows the bare truth of what is clearly evident for him to see and know. In verses 30 to 33, you don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that God doesn't listen to sinners. He listens to the godly person who does his will. Nobody has ever heard of the opening of the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. You know, subscribing to those that follow Jesus won't really win you friends and influence. And you see it in the life of this blind man. All the Pharisees do now is just hurl their insults more and more at Jesus. It's so clear that they're just not willing to change their point of view. And so they throw at this man, "You were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture at us?" Not even going to any facts or anything, but just throwing their insults at the man. And we're meant to take that on board and see what's going on in the various parties that were there that day. Now that man is not alone when he's finally thrown out by the Pharisees. Jesus comes to him in verse 35. I think there's a picture, verse 35, that can come up. And Jesus puts him on the spot and asks him the question that this has all been leading up to. And this is a central question that John wants us to encounter in his gospel. He's putting before us, do you believe in the Son of Man? Well, that seems to have been Jesus' favorite title for talking about him, Son of Man. And it could just mean human being, but we know that it references Daniel 7, this really great majestic figure who's able to approach the Ancient of Days, God the Father, who comes on the cloud of heavens. The Son of Man is said to be given all power and all authority, glory and sovereign power. And Jesus is taking this title and he's applying it to himself. And he's saying, do you believe in the Son of Man? And that question is there for us to take on board. And the blind man, for his part, operating in simple faith in what he has before him, in verse 36, which I think we have a slide for, says, "Who is he, sir? Tell me so that I may believe in him." Well, that's a simple, honest question that seeks understanding. And Jesus reveals so clearly and simply to this man in verse 37. Next slide. You have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you. This is the moment when the healed man has the most clear sight. The most clear sight of who Jesus is. See, this is what this passage is working on. Who do you see when you see Jesus? And Jesus has laid it out very clear for him to see. And the man's response is the response that comes with a really clear-sighted understanding of who Jesus is. In verse 38, he says, Lord, I believe. I think we've got that. Yep. And then there's a really interesting comment on his next response. And he worshipped Jesus. You don't worship people. You worship God. And that's no small statement, is it? It's right there. We're hearing something massive about who Jesus is that's being delivered to us. The payload of this section is to hear this man's response, understand the enormity of the sight that he has of who Jesus is, and take that on board for ourselves. It's saying so much more than that he sees Jesus as a healer or as a prophet or as a wonderful teacher or any of those sort of things that are good and wonderful. Worshipping Jesus recognizes Jesus as divine, as God. God in human form. And the very one who's brought healing and sight physically as well as spiritually to this man's eyes. And it's very much his spiritual sight that's in view in this passage. That's what we're meant to be encountering and taking on board for ourselves, understanding where we sit in relation to Jesus with our sight and our vision. And it simply involves taking on board who Jesus is from his own words. Now, you might be on a journey. This man certainly was. That gives me hope, by the way. That gives me encouragement for anyone who's along the journey. It shows me that there are people on a journey. Keep praying for those people you know that are on a journey. But it also gives me a warning. Don't grow into keeping Jesus at arm's length. Because that's what the Pharisees did. They did not take on board Jesus' words about himself. They could see that Jesus had healed this man. They had all the indications. There was something that they saw, but they weren't willing to see it with spiritual eyes. Where it mattered most, they were still blind. And it's at this point that we hear Jesus say that he came into the world for judgment, and that judgment is along the lines of sight or blindness. In verse 39, for judgment I have come into this world so that the blind will see and those who see will become blind. In other words, Jesus describes the results of God's judgment in connection with whether you see Jesus clearly or whether you don't, whether you're blind. And that becomes the basis of everything. It is so fundamental and foundational. Well, the Pharisees got offended by that statement. And they betray themselves to Jesus in this dialogue. Are we blind too? They ask that in verse 40. And Jesus says in verse 41, if you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains. See, they've claimed to have sight, but their guilt remains because what sight they haven't responded well with. And where you end up with in all of that is with people not seeing Jesus clearly, not if they're responding in that way. Because if you see Jesus clearly for who he is, as he reveals himself to you, you're going to respond from the deepest parts of your life. There's big stings at stake in this. It's really huge. Big considerations for us. But there's also wonderful outcomes. Wonderful outcomes that exist for God's people who see Jesus and respond in simple faith. Faith in Jesus is everything that you need. Following Jesus and having him as the light of life is the act of having spiritual eyes that see Jesus, understand who he is, and worship him. This whole account was recorded for you, so that you would know what it looks like to be the person who knows Jesus as the light of the world in personal terms for you. This is an open door to you. It's opening the door to you to show that this sits on such simple terms. It's not obscured behind some curtain, wrapped in some smoke machine that's blowing smoke in your face. It's clear, it's simple, and it's there, and it's before you, and you can take hold of this. It's here so that you'd see what a valid response to Jesus looks like. It's so easy. And yet it's so distant to people who hold it at arm's length. No one ever made themselves something remarkable in order to first come before Jesus. Jesus is always the one who reaches out to you first. If there's something stirring in you today about Jesus and that you long for, be aware that Jesus has got you in his hands. He's reached out to you first. And you could come before Jesus like this blind man did. This blind man's encounter with Jesus could be yours through faith and in prayer. Christians love this story. I love this story because it speaks of the goodness of Jesus. Reaching into this man's life who has such deep need, drawing him to himself, giving him the world. Takes us back to foundational and simple truths that have set us free. Jesus is unchangeable, and that offer stands on the table for you today. How about we come before him now in prayer?